The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Coming up, Nicole tells your fortune looking ahead. So get out your crystal and stay tuned with Mistress Nicole. All dressed in leather, you won't forget her. You want to love her and you won't let go. Who's that woman, crazy woman, Nicole?
It's Friday. Yeah. Hey, we've made it to the end of the first week of 2022. So we got that going for us. Yeah, we do. And yesterday wasn't as horrible a day as I imagined it would be. Although it depends on, you know, what parameters you're using to judge the degree of awfulness. If you were listening to Republicans, to today's crop of Republicans, for the most part, it was a pretty sad and sickening day. So for the show card today, I used a graphic that I found online about gaslighting. And this is what I believe the Republicans are doing to this country, because they know full well what happened a year and a day ago. They know full well that it was a riot. It was an insurrection. There was a siege of the Capitol. People came armed and they were looking for blood. And it doesn't matter what they say, because all they do is lie. This is part of the gaslighting of America that Donald Trump excels at. Pains me to say he's good at anything, but he's really good at lying. So I found this slide online that explains 11 characteristics that show when someone's gaslighting. They tell blatant lies. They deny they ever said something, even though you have the proof. They use whatever is near and dear to you as ammunition. They'll wear you down over time. Their actions do not match their words. They throw in positive reinforcement to confuse you. They know confusion weakens people. They project, you think? They try to align people against you. They tell you or others that you're crazy. And they tell you everyone else is a liar. You know, if you put it in like kids' terms, it's the old, well, in one sense, I'm rubber, you're glue. Everything you say bounces off me and sticks to you. It's the old, that's the projection part of it. And it's astounding. You know, I don't normally watch the Fox, and I didn't even turn it on last night, even though I was tempted to see what they were doing. But you couldn't escape today from the video of Ted Cruz going on with Tucker Carlson and begging for his mercy. Why did Ted Cruz need the mercy of Tucker Carlson or anybody else? Well, because he actually described what was happening a year and a day ago at the Capitol as a terrorist attack. And boy, did Tucker Carlson just berate him to that, you know, to the point where little Teddy was whimpering and saying, please like me, please like me. I didn't really mean it. And Tucker Carlson's going, I don't believe you. It's some sort of weird game they play over there, and it's frightening. And, you know, on the one hand, I think we'd be best served by ignoring them. But on the other hand, I know that we can't just ignore them. Because, you know, I get the argument not to give them any oxygen. I get that. But if the crazy, outlandish, ridiculous, stupid things they say aren't challenged, then you're basically letting it stand. You're letting their falsehood stand. So, for instance, today, this morning, starting at 10 o'clock, and it ran until like 1 or 2, it seemed, the Supreme Court heard arguments. They weren't supposed to hear oral arguments, but they did today on two cases having to do with Joe Biden's vaccine mandates. The first one was a challenge to his mandate that every private company with 100 or more employees have a vaccine mandate. And the second one was a vaccine requirement for healthcare workers at places that get federal funding. And I'll tell you, boy, this was depressing. Whenever there's a contentious Supreme Court case like this, a good person to follow along with on Twitter is Ellie Mistal. You know, we love Ellie. He's a fairly frequent guest on this program. And he was just, he was right there today calling out the bullshit. And believe me, there was so much bullshit. I wonder, let's see, did I save any of his tweets? I may just have to pull him up. The best one, and do I not have this one? Okay, hold on. I got to find it. Let me open up this thread. I bet it's in this thread. Ellie Mistal called out Neil Gorsuch because Neil Gorsuch needs to be called out because this moron, first of all, he was in the Supreme Court chambers, did not wear his mask. He was the only one of the justices who were there, apparently, who wouldn't wear a mask. He refused to wear a mask. And then he said something really ridiculous. Oh, my God, I just closed that window. Hold on one second. I got to get it up here again. Come on. Now I got to find it. Oh, shoot. I just had it, and I hit the wrong button. So Neil Gorsuch, I got to scroll down to find it again. Shit. Sorry about that. Best laid plans. Let me make sure that I did start the stream on YouTube. Just had to check and make sure because already I'm having these little... Okay, here we go. That's the wrong one. So Neil Gorsuch, again, the only one who did not wear a mask. Why can't I find this now? Oh, okay, it was earlier than this. Damn it. Basically, the tweet I'm looking for explains how Neil Gorsuch gets his news. Here it is. Gorsuch said, the flu kills hundreds of thousands of people every year. No, it really doesn't. And so Ellie tweeted that and says, no, it does not. Stop getting your medical stats from Fox, not news. And he went on to just take him apart. Gorsuch, who will look to a woodcut fashioned by Thomas Jefferson when tried to figure out if black people are allowed to vote, believed that the OSHA's authority to protect us from disease is invalid because Congress passed the law 50 years ago. He has more. He said, I know Gorsuch, nor any conservative, nor any, oh my God, I'm bored and I want to go to the movies person, will apologize for their consistent COVID misinformation. But COVID is orders of magnitude more deadly than the goddamn flu. And then he says, honestly, to argue effectively in front of the Supreme Court these days, you have to be a regular Fox watcher because so many of the questions from Republican justices are ripped from their segments. Yeah, the main problem is there are six now, count them, six right-wing crazies on the Supreme Court who are, you know, responsible for the direction that this country takes. I do want to play for you, though. I'm so glad we have Sonia Sotomayor, who's wonderful, and Elena Kagan, who she was having none of it today. Here's a little bit of Elena Kagan letting loose on one of the attorneys. Oh, by the way, one of the attorneys in each case who were arguing for, you know, against the vaccines had to do their presentations from home because they both tested positive for COVID. And they're saying, no, we don't need to be vaccinated.
Why isn't this necessary to abate a grave risk? This is a pandemic in which nearly a million people have died. It is by far the greatest public health danger that this country has faced in the last century.
You think?
More and more people are dying every day. More and more people are getting sick every day. I don't mean to be dramatic here. I'm just sort of stating facts. And this is the policy that is... most Thursday. Geared to stopping all this. There's nothing else that will perform that function better than incentivizing people strongly to vaccinate themselves.
You think?
So, you know, whatever necessary means, whatever grave means, why isn't this necessary and grave?
Because, Justice Kagan, the standard for what would be necessary for this extraordinary use of emergency power is not what is the best way of accomplishing.
It's an extraordinary use of emergency power occurring in an extraordinary circumstance, a circumstance that this country has never faced before.
What OSHA needed to do here, though, and we do not contest that COVID is a grave danger, but a power for it to be necessary, for instance, the Third Circuit said, in wielding what is supposed to be a delicately exercised extraordinary power, the agency has to consider and explain alternatives. The agency here complained that its non-mandatory guidance wasn't being followed.
What?
And then instead of saying that maybe some of those guidances could have been made mandatory, it jumped immediately to a vaccine or testing mandate. Moreover, OSHA typically...
Mr. Carter, I guess I just don't see this as a situation, you know, a typical arbitrary, capricious situation where we say, oh, you didn't consider an alternative carefully enough. We all know what the best policy is. I mean...
Yeah, and she went on from there. Elena Kagan was quite brilliant today, as was Sonia Sotomayor, and even Stephen Breyer had a few good moments. I was in and out of the hearings all day because I do other stuff I have to do. But I'll tell you, the bottom line is that this Supreme Court will go along with the people challenging the mandates. The only question appears to be whether it'll be 6-3 or 5-4. And that's it. And that's how we are just so screwed. And again, yeah, two of those attorneys were arguing remotely from home because they have COVID. I don't know what's so difficult. I guess I'm relegated to staying at home for the foreseeable future. And by the way, here in Florida, we just broke another record for infections and hospitalizations, and I believe even the deaths are up. And that's, you know, and Ron DeSantis will keep lying to you and telling you, we don't need the vaccines, we need the monoclonal antibodies.
I just need you to shut the fuck up, because nobody asked you, bitch.
For Ron.
I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch, shut the fuck up, bitch. Just shut the fuck up, bitch, shut the fuck up, bitch. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up.
Bow, bow,
shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up. Bow, bow.
I need to put that on my phone so, like, if I ever see Ron DeSantis in person, I can play it for him. All right. I see a caller from, it looks to be, Los Angeles area. Hi, who's this? Hello? Oh, and they hung up. So whoever that was didn't want to hang out. Okay, so I'm going to play something for you. It may get me a copyright violation, but it might. But I think it's worth it. I think it's worth it. I'm going to post this video on the blog. No, people want to do, someone's saying Nicole for president. No. Then someone said, and I'm looking at the YouTube chat room, Nicole for Florida governor. Hell no. I don't want to run for office. If someone wanted to give me a job in government, I would take it. But I would not run for elected office because I wouldn't put myself or my family through the attacks that car, and that's why we have shitty people running for the most part, not everybody, but I wouldn't put myself or anybody I love through what would be lobbed at me. And I have a history. So anyway, so no, don't, I don't want to run, for office. Anyway, so back to this. This was the cold open last night on Stephen Colbert's show, and it just was perfect. So hopefully they don't copyright violate me. They may block the video. If they block the video, I'll remove, you know, my whole YouTube video. They'll take it down sometimes. If they do that, I will edit out this segment so it will come back up. And I will post this video on the blog where I post today's show. It'll be at NicoleSandler.com/1-7-22. It's NicoleSandler.com with the date. So that you can see it. Because for those of you listening on Progressive Voices or to an audio stream on another online station or the podcast, it'll still be good. You'll still get a kick out of it, but you need to see the video that goes along with the audio. So I will post it for you. Or just go to my Facebook or my Twitter page because I tweeted them out already today. So you ready for it? Again, I fully credit The Late Show with Stephen Colbert because this is fucking brilliant.
Thursday, January 6th. It has been 1 year, if you can believe it.
1 year.
1 year.
The 1 year anniversary of a violent assault on the center of America's democracy.
Abhorrent. In the rent, you know, lettering.
525,600 minutes. 365 days since feces were smeared. 12,000 self-incriminating Instagram pictures.
Uh-huh.
One Viking shaman doing 3.5 years. Infectors, infectors, this guy tried to steal a lectern. Stupid facts, huge douchebags and recess white shoes. 727 insurrectionists arrested. Who else should be jailed for this unsuccessful coup? How about this? Bomb. Is it terrorist scum? That's his terrorist son. Like Mussolini, but dumb. 7,328 camo-based outfits, 12,116 mason-induced tears, 147 treasonous dimwits, one of who really cannot pull off a beard.
Oh, no.
Rudy looks drunk.
Oh, and that's how it ends. Insurrection. And just in time, because there's a notice on my software. Heads up, we've detected copyrighted audio and video in your stream. Your stream may be temporarily blocked. But, oh my God, if it is, it was worth it. That was brilliance. That was perfect. Just absolutely perfect. Although it does look like it dumped half of my viewers at once. I'm sorry if YouTube dumped you. But yes, it is shared. It is up on YouTube. The Late Show on their account shared it on YouTube. And I put it on Twitter and I put it on Facebook. And if they do block this video, well, you won't see this, but I will unblock it later. Hopefully they don't completely violate me. But oh my God, how perfect was that? I told you, those cold opens on Colbert, you know, they hit him out of the ballpark or, you know, sometimes they don't work. But boy, when they work, they're fucking brilliant. That was great. All right. I hope you're back. I hope you're here. I know we did lose a few people there. Yeah, hopefully you're still there. Okay. So let me tell you who. Oh, David N. said, I'm the caller who dropped. Digital weird. This rent address is inspired. We're all in this together. Thank you, David. And I'm sorry your call dropped. I don't know what happened there. But thank you. And he made a little donation on YouTube as well, which I really, really appreciate. Oh, it looks like everyone's been restored now. Okay, the people who were lost in the stream are back. Welcome back. If you were thrown off, it was because I played copyrighted material. I apologize for that. All right. Let me tell you, we do have a guest coming up today. At the end of the show last night, I said I didn't know what we were going to be doing today. And I thought about doing one of my non-political things. But then today I'm reading a lot of different takes on what transpired yesterday. And one of my favorite authors weighed in, as I figured he would. If you've listened to the show for any amount of time, you've no doubt heard Jeff Charlotte, Sharlett, Jeff Charlotte. I first learned of Jeff Charlotte from his book, The Family. You see, Jeff Charlotte, he, in addition to being like an English professor at Dartmouth and an author of a number of really great books, he's also a journalist. I mean, he's just a Renaissance man. So he went basically undercover with the family, with C Street, right. And he infiltrated their group to where he was living in the townhouse in Washington, D.C. on C Street, and learned the inner workings of the family, which it sounds like it couldn't possibly be real, but it is. It's a religious cult that operates at the highest levels of Washington, D.C., and Jeff Charlotte got right in the middle of it. He wrote The Family and then the follow-up book called C Street. And then those two books were memorialized in a Netflix docuseries, which you can still see, and you should if you haven't seen it yet. Yes, Carne Verde in the chat room just said, Jeff Charlotte's a national treasure. We need people who expose the fraudulence of our leaders. And that's so true. So, he is now, in addition to everything else, he's a regular contributor at Vanity Fair. And sure enough, Jeff Charlotte wrote a piece yesterday that's posted at the Vanity Fair website in the section called The Hive, I believe. Anyway, I think it's in The Hive, or just look for his name. It's, you know, you go to vanityfair.com/contributor/Jeff Charlotte, or just put his name in the search engine inside vanityfair.com and it'll come to him. So the article he wrote is titled Joe Biden Unbound Won't Be Enough to Save Us. And the where he got that Unbound from was the CNN, Gloria Borger, who's their chief political analyst. She described Biden's speech yesterday as Joe Biden Unbound. And after the speech, after the speech, as he was leaving, he stopped to talk to some reporters. And he told them, the way you have to heal, you have to recognize the extent of the wound. You can't pretend. But Jeff Charlotte posits that he did pretend. And so we're going to talk about that. Because as I said yesterday, and I even believe fully today, that was the best speech that Biden has ever delivered, ever. And so, I just realized I closed the phone. So if anybody wants to call in, I'm opening it again. So you can if you want to. Anyway, I'm going to share with you just a few. I thought I was going to play the whole thing. I don't have time. It's 24 minutes. So that would eat up a big chunk of the show. And I'm just not that magnanimous. So maybe I'll play it at the end of the show. But you can find it. I posted the entire transcript of the speech along with yesterday's show yesterday. So you should read it. But okay, I think this might be our friend calling back. Hi. Hello. Who's this?
It's Cousin Nicole. It's Brother David.
Oh, hey, Brother David. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. How are you?
I'm okay. Boy, it's been a long time.
When people ask, well, it's way too long. Well, I've been working for the Affordable Care Act for the last 5 years. And I'm finally free from that tyranny, and that's another story for another day. But I had to reach out because it's just, here's where we're at. And you're absolutely right. It's the best speech he's ever given.
Absolutely.
And she, I had forgotten that she was still a member of the Senate. Her intro was also like, whoa.
Oh, Kamala Harris. Yes. Right.
It's the truth. She must be protected at all costs. I have not had the access, also with Randy, also with, you know, listening. I have not been able to listen.
Oh.
And yesterday I was finally able to listen to you again for the first time. And bless your heart. I'm serious. Bless your heart.
Oh, well, thank you.
Chopping through the grunge, Nicole.
Yeah, we try,
chopping
don't we?
Through the grunge. I still am hopeful about where we're at right now. It's we're mutating. That's what's happening.
You're right.
The planet is mutating.
Yeah, it is.
And
it's a good way to put it.
Sunlight is still the best disinfectant.
Mm-hmm.
And as horrible as the last 5 years were, and as really scary as what's ahead of us is going to be, I feel like there is that light at the end of the tunnel, at the end of the tunnel.
I so hope you're right. I hope you, look, we need that kind of energy out there, because I think, I do think there's something to what goes out in the universe is what we bring back. I'm not religious at all, but I do believe that.
No, but
you get back what you give out.
Law of physics.
Yep.
Yeah. And the thing that I find really helpful, everyone's yelling at Merrick Garland. Well, Merrick Garland is building an airtight case.
Yeah, and you know what?
Widest swath.
Yeah, you know, Marcy Wheeler was on this show last week, or at the beginning of the week, whenever it was, last week. I think she was, whenever, recently. And she went through the whole litany of the cases that have already been not prosecuted, but the deals cut, and the case that Merrick Garland is building. And she said, we need to be patient, because he's doing it methodically. Yeah. He is slogging through. This is a huge number of cases, and that they are doing the work that needs to be done, and we need to be patient.
Precisely, because then it will be airtight, and it will be this mountain against the mountain of treason that is in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and other than that, I have to stay in Kansas until Laura Kelly gets reelected.
Oh, my God, you're in Kansas.
That's where I'll end up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kansas, wow.
Yeah. Right.
I'm sorry to hear that. But you said you were working for the Affordable Care Act. What, letting people know that the prices have come down? You know, they still have about a week, right? There's still a week or so.
That was my employer up until the end of the year. They have a week, and it's still, how do I say this? I want to be politic here. Well, not politic, but I want to be diplomatic. The thing about it is that it is a jerry-rigged system between the pharmaceuticals,
of course,
and the medical providers.
Yep.
And
or as I've called it for years, David, it is government-sanctioned extortion. You have to have health insurance, but we're being legally extorted. They are given the keys to extort us. But if you don't have it and you get sick, you're really fucked.
Bingo. Mm-hmm. And there you have it. Which is why I am now on the other side of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the whole local thing, right? Look at what you can do locally and with the global eye. Because that's what it's going to come down to. It's already, we're already there. We just haven't seen it in many parts of the country. Nomadland, we could all be pooping in buckets before it's all over. So we better
some of us already are.
Together.
Yes. No, I hear you. And we do have to keep, look, we need to keep the spirits up. We need to have some bit of confidence that we're going to be able to pull through this and band together, because the people that we saw yesterday on television denying what we've seen with our own two eyes, what people
not
that
denied.
We've spoken to were in the middle of Officer Fanone, who got the shit beat out of him by these so-called patriots. We know what happened that day, and we're not going to let them gaslight us, and we're not going to let them steal this country. We have to prevent that at all costs.
And we will. I really do believe in that, Nicole. It is so good to talk to you. Have you seen Summer of Soul?
Summer of Soul. I don't know.
On Hulu, the documentary. It's Questlove's documentary about the 1969 Harlem cultural.
Oh, you know what? I heard about it, but I don't think we've watched it yet. I'm going to write it on my list.
It's my movie of the year. It has dropped just.
And it's on Hulu, huh? Okay. We will watch
it.
It's on Hulu. That is right up our alley. David, it's so nice to hear from you. It is. I don't think we've spoken. And I could be wrong.
5 years, 7 years, maybe.
Yeah, it was the last time I filled in for Randy Rhodes before her show ended on Premiere, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
A good 7 years.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, thank you for calling. It's so nice to hear from you, and I hope you'll be listening.
Thank you for having.
Yes, absolutely.
And hang in there, dear. We are all in this together.
Yes, we are. All right, David, good to hear from you. Stay in touch.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, so that was a nice treat. That was a nice surprise. Okay, so coming up in a few minutes, Jeff Charlotte's going to join us. And what I told you is we've got a slightly difference in opinion on Joe Biden's speech yesterday. So let me just share a couple of clips with you. right? Because, he said this.
For the first time in our history, a president had not just lost an election, he tried to prevent the peaceful transfer of power as a violent mob breached the Capitol. But they failed. They failed.
They failed. They did. But so this is the first time Joe Biden, who's tried to stay above the fray for the last year, really let loose on the former guy. And he really got under his skin. His person, you know, released a statement yesterday and another one today in which Donald Trump claimed he used my name. And he never used his name. He just said things like this.
Even before the first ballot was cast, the former president was preemptively sowing doubt about the election results. He built his lie over months, wasn't based on any facts. He was just looking for an excuse, a pretext to cover for the truth. He's not just a former president. He's a defeated former president. Defeated by a margin of over 7 million of your votes in a full and free and fair election. There is simply zero proof the election results were inaccurate. In fact, in every venue where evidence had to be produced, an oath to tell the truth had to be taken, the former president failed to make his case. Just think about this.
Yeah.
The former president and his supporters have never been able to explain how they accept as accurate the other election results that took place on November 3rd.
This is an interesting point he made
governor,
here.
United States Senate, House of Representatives, elections which they closed the gap in the House. They challenged none of that. President's name was first. Then we went down the line. Governors, senators, House of Representatives. Somehow those results are accurate on the same ballot. But the presidential race was flawed. And on the same ballot, the same day, cast by the same voters, the only difference, the former president didn't lose those races. He just lost the one that was his own.
Yeah, they never could explain that, right?
Finally, the third big lie being told by...
Oh, sorry. I didn't edit it cleanly enough. Okay, so that's just one part of the speech that I was impressed with, because for the first time in a year, I felt like Joe Biden took the gloves off. But I appear to have a slightly different opinion of the speech than our guest does. So let me now welcome back to the show, Jeff Charlotte. Hey, Jeff, it's so good to see you. Happy New Year.
Hi, Nicole. Good to be with you. Happy New Year.
Thank you. So Jeff Charlotte is an author of many books, including, as I mentioned earlier, The Family and C Street, which were subsequently made into a Netflix documentary series. He's a professor at Dartmouth, author of other books, including like this one, which I still keep right here because I love it. It's called This Brilliant Darkness. Sweet Darkness When I Die?
No, it's called Sweet Heaven When I Die.
Sweet Heaven When I Die.
Because the original title, which was called Sweet Fuck All Colorado, which is an actual bar in Colorado that calls itself that. It's in the book. And we decided that wouldn't do as well at bookstores.
You're probably right. And Jeff is also a contributing editor at Vanity Fair, where I figured I would see something today dealing with the events of yesterday and last year. And sure enough, you published a piece there that is titled Joe Biden Unbound Won't Be Enough to Save Us. And the unbound comes from the way somebody on CNN described the speech, that Gloria Borger said Joe Biden was unbound. But then you quote, you say, the subtitle reads, "To heal, you can't pretend," Biden told reporters. But his speech on the anniversary of the Capitol riot did just that, turning a blind eye to the ugly cracks in the American foundation that threatened to undermine our country entirely. So I was excited that Joe Biden finally took the gloves off and wasn't mincing his words. But you're saying he was still a little bit disingenuous, or he pretended.
Well, first of all, he pretended when he said, "This is not who we are. It's not who we've ever been." No,
it is who we are.
And he gave us the treatment plan. He says, He said, what's the exact line? He says, you know, we have to look at the wound, right? We can't pretend, right? So he gives us the treatment plan, and then we don't do it. We say, we're better than that. So whenever we do that, that's what I call the sort of the unity myth, to say that we're one people. What the unity myth does is it tells us that we're better than we are, rather than calling us to be better than we have been. Let us face the facts. Authoritarianism has been a part of the American experiment since the beginning. It's part of it, and now we can all really see it. It's part of us. So that's what we saw with that speech, is a sort of saying, well, we're not like that. Well, a lot of us are, unfortunately. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They did elect Donald Trump in 2016, and a lot of them voted for him in 2020, and a lot of them are probably going to vote for him in 2024, right? So let's contend with the real struggle, and let's not do this thing that Biden did. This was the other part that was really disturbing to me, was he displaced all the blame onto Trump.
Right.
We got heel in wrestling terms, right? We've got a real authoritarian movement. We've got authoritarian movement. He said there's the great line I really admired, the dagger held at the throat of American democracy, right? Mm-hmm. It's white supremacy holding that dagger.
It's who holding that dagger?
White supremacy. This is a whole speech about the fascist threat to America that didn't mention race.
Didn't mention white supremacy. You're right.
And I heard people saying, well, he can't do everything in one speech. You know, you can't do everything, but that's the first thing. And you really can't do anything until you wrestle with that.
Right. So, Jeff, let me ask you this. The whole white supremacy question is an interesting one. Although I think Donald Trump has always been a racist. I mean, that goes back to the Central Park Five. We've known he's been a racist his whole life. And his renting practices, even his father had trouble, you know, with the blacks in their apartments. But the whole the venturing into the land of white supremacy, I think it's sort of him following the lead of the people who were his supporters. I don't think he knew particularly who the Proud Boys were or some of those extremist groups until they turned out to be his constituents. These are the people supporting him, and then I don't think he cared. He was gonna support whoever supported him, regardless of who they were or what they thought. Am I off base with that?
No, I agree with you. But that white, and I don't even care if he's racist. You
right.
know, it's a little bit like you know, we talked before. I've written about Putin and Russia and his homophobic campaigns. Putin's not homophobic. He could care less, but it works, so he does it. And this is no consolation to a queer person. Well, don't worry. He's not really homophobic. Who cares?
Right. Right.
Whatever. I think Trump is a racist, but it wouldn't matter. I mean, look, if you're willing to use racism, you're a racist. So he is a racist, unquestionably. But I'm also less concerned with Trump than I am in the tens of millions of people behind him. This is not up. And what I found troubling in that speech and that clip you were just playing, who was Joe Biden talking to? Who was he trying to persuade that Donald Trump lost the election? Does he think that Trump's followers tuned into that election?
No, they absolutely didn't. And certainly the right-leaning networks didn't carry it.
Right. So anybody watching that already knew that. And now here's another, the next thing that he's trying to do. He's trying to say, now look at this. Is this really what you believe in? And instead of saying, yeah, they've been telling us who they are, they're like, yes, this is what we really believe in. It's the liberal, forgive me, this is a thing that has always plagued us on the left. Mm-hmm. There is a parallelism. This idea that people don't agree with us because they don't understand, which is reassuring to us. If we could just get past the disinformation, if we could just somehow connect to them. These people are so dumb, they just need our guidance to come in. Well, I spent a lot of time. I just drove across the country talking, following this. Mm-hmm. They're choosing authoritarianism not because they don't know any better. They're choosing it because they want it.
Well, this is what
more serious threat.
Right. So this is what I wanted to explore, because Jeff Charlotte, you've put yourself in these situations before with the family and C Street. You basically went undercover. You became a member. You lived in the house on C Street with them. You got to know who they were and what they were doing. This is a weird religious cult that operates, and tell me if I'm wrong, at the highest levels of Washington, D.C. Very secretive.
I'll jump right in there.
Okay.
They're not weird at all.
They're not weird at all. They're normal.
when we look at the people, Chuck Grassley, they are the mainstream. This is what we've got to get past, this idea that this is a fringe.
Right.
The fringe, you know, what I tried to write in that article was, look, the fascism that got into the house on that day, the fascism was already in the house. Josh Hawley, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, so many others, right? Mm-hmm. And it's still in the house, right? This is like Scream. The call is coming from inside
the house.
The fringe, it's at the center. We want to say Joe Biden was appealing to norms that no longer exist. I wish they did. To a certain extent, I don't look. Some people are saying, well, I just want to return to the pre-Trump America. I sure as hell don't. This is who we are. I would like us to be better than we have ever been. I would like us to be called upon to go further than we've ever been. And Biden at times does that with that rhetoric of this is not who we are yesterday.
Right.
It was a pat on the back for us. It was reassuring. We all loved hearing him sock it to them. I didn't sock it to them.
But it was a strong, I mean, for him, I enjoyed hearing him being a bit on the offense rather than, you know, say, oh, we're going to make peace. We're going to work together. It's like, stop that. So at least he didn't do that. But I hear where you're coming from. But the point I'm getting at, Jeff, so you've been in the middle of this religious cult in the center of Washington, D.C., and you've traveled the country going to these, you went to many, many Trump rallies, talking to these people, really getting in it with them. And I'm wondering, is there a similarity between the religious fanatics and then these people who I think are functioning under another kind of religion? Is it religion?
It's not a similarity. There's a broad convergence of the biggest social movement of our time. And we are all here. It's a social movement. Mm. It's a social movement doesn't good. Social movement is a broad number of people who share like ideas. That's a social movement. It's not a good term or a bad term. Us liberals have said, oh, social movement, that only means things that we like. It's good. No, this is a social movement. It's a convergence of many strands of the right. It's got intellectuals. There's a terrific piece I recommend in the latest New Republic by my friend Catherine Joyce on the shifting, the very rapidly shifting deep intellectual currents of the right, the European American cross pollination. It's got the gun folks. It's got, we know all the gangs, right? When a social movement is powerful is when they converge.
Uh-huh.
When the various factions, and they're fighting too, and that's good news. That's part of why I always encourage people, don't look at the right as a monolith, because there's factions, there's fault lines, and we can exploit them, and we should. We should say, oh, we are so glad that you're angry at the NRA. Yes. I don't care why you're angry at the NRA. Stop giving them money. That's great. I support that. So let's exploit those fault lines. But yeah, it's a big, broad convergence. And that's what that speech, you said you enjoyed it. Look, I'll tell you, I enjoyed it too, Nicole. It was made for us to enjoy.
Right. It was for you and me.
Yeah, but we don't need it. You know, we were already there. It wasn't like Nicole, like, I don't know if I really am concerned about this. We were already there. It was like Twitter. It riled us up and so on. We get out the vote thing. It was talking about, like, we've got to do these voting rights things that, and man, I was like, yeah.
Should have been done a year ago, but okay.
A year ago and are not going to happen. Mm. That was a political statement. So what's next? Because that's already been broken. So what's...
Well, when you say, Jeff, that this is aimed at us, that we didn't need it, we did, because he was starting to lose us because of the broken promises, because of the backpedaling, because we didn't get Build Back Better done, and he's being held hostage by Joe Manchin, of all people, because he didn't do away with a student loan debt. He didn't get any, all this litany of promises that he made that was going to help all of us, which is what got people to go vote for him, even though they weren't that enthusiastic about him personally. They said, all right, well, we'll give him a shot and we'll vote against the other guy. Well, now we're going, well, not you and me, because we're going to do the responsible thing. I'm going to vote against Donald Trump and the fascists, whoever it is, even if it is Joe Biden, right? Or my dog Jackson, I don't care. But there are millions of people out there who are going, the Democrats didn't do anything they promised me they were going to do. Why should I vote for them?
And so we give them smoke and mirrors. We're going to fight. You can't fight if you won't even name the enemy. And a lot of people were impressed that he didn't name Trump.
Right.
Here we are 5 years into the Trumpocene, and we still are not paying attention to how Trump wins. Trump wins when we say his name. Trump wins when we refuse to say his name, when we give him Voldemort power, when we say the stories about him, when we say it's a bad apple, a Pied Piper who led the good American people astray, as if we don't have a disease in our country of white supremacy, as if we don't say, no, look, I'm going to contend our country, we have not confronted. Mm-hmm. We have not confronted our demons at all. And that's going to be a big struggle. I'm going to do that. If we just say, all we got to do is keep Trump at arm's length, then we're okay.
But it's not, as you point out, it's not just Trump. And that Joe Biden put it all on him and seemingly gave a pass to the people who actually stormed the Capitol, to the people who would keep going, who are now attacking Trump because he went off the reservation and he's saying, no, you should get a vaccine. Well, so that to them is him being a traitor to their cause in this weird opposite world that they live in. And so now they're turning on him in some sense.
They don't care too much. I think we on the left enjoyed that more. I mean, look, I've been to a lot of Trump rallies. I've seen people say things like, oh, God, I totally don't agree with that. Again, it's us underestimating the right. They're not zombies. They're not dupes. They're people who have chosen fascism. They chose fascism. It's not like they were that if we can just figure out what to say to our crazy uncle at the dinner, he'll say, thank God, right. You're right. You know, they chose fascism. They had the options on the table and they said, I think I like this one. Right. They chose fascism. Trump is the vessel of that. Some of them see it in divine terms. Some of it see it in practical terms. The movement is still there. It's still strong. It's not unbeatable. It's not unbeatable. But we want to come to that fight. Biden yesterday was, we were all admiring his form while he shadow boxed instead of confronting the real enemy. While he fought a fight. I mean, that was a terrific speech from 1988.
So
it was about old norms that are
right.
No longer there.
Well, all the norms are gone. And I would say many of them have disappeared because Donald Trump disappeared them. Things that were norms. He just said, I don't accept that. The system of checks and balances in our government, which I thought was real and operational until Trump said, screw them. I'm not doing this. We're not complying with a congressional subpoena. Who are they? They have no power over me. And all of a sudden you realize, oh my God, there's no enforcement mechanism in there. So everything is so precarious.
Did you hear him talk about enforcement mechanism yesterday?
Say that again?
Did you hear him talk about enforcement mechanism?
No.
This was supposed to bring us back. This lost me more. I heard this speech a little bit like I heard his big Omicron speech. We're going to do half a billion tests. When? How?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, good news that we got today was that they have just accepted bids. Here we are. And that maybe by March, we'll actually be up to speed making these tests. Why the hell were you not doing this before? I heard on CNN, I heard pundits, and they loved the speech. They were sort of saying, this is a speech he could have given a year ago.
He should have given a year ago.
Hey, I would not, even then I would have said, how are you talking about this without talking about race?
Yes.
What are you talking about? People say, oh, but he mentioned the Confederate flag again, this is for us. This is not to fight the right, because when we do our work as researchers on the right, we discover that the Confederate flag is plummeting and popularity in the right. They're not using that symbol anymore. So when you target them, lots and lots of fascists are like, yeah, that's not me. He's not
talking
about me.
Yeah, that's them.
There were more South Vietnamese flags on January 6th, which has become a symbol of the right, of a country that no longer exists. There was more South Vietnamese flags than there were Confederate flags, right? So instead of using this kind of, well, Confederate flag, that's a bad guy. We all know. We can imagine Bubba and his truck with his Confederate flag. Instead of saying like, all right, let's look at these suburban school boards where we are seeing tons and tons. And these are not necessarily Bubbas with trucks. These are the soccer moms. These are the people banning, any kind of mention of queerness or the history of slavery or race itself. These are not the Bubbas.
No.
let's face up to the real struggle and let's meet it. It's going to be a fight. There's no getting around this fight. There's no bringing us all together. We're going to have a fight. Let's have it now instead of letting it become a civil war.
So, Jeff Charlotte, if you were tasked with writing the speech for Joe Biden yesterday, what would you have said? I know you need more time. I'm just putting you on the spot. If you're going to craft a presidential speech, it's going to take you a little while.
You know what? I can answer that because in the first draft of that piece for Vanity Fair, I quoted something I thought he had said, and my editor thought he had said, and then we were looking very closely at it and we had misheard it. We thought he had he'd used the phrase, these barbarous days. Oh, that's a good phrase. That's a good little bit of language. These barbarous days, let us name what's going on. Let us not pretend that this is a blip, an aberration. Let us imagine the democracy we can build beyond it, right? Let us follow the lead of so much aspirational rhetoric in American history. We don't have to go out all that radical. We can stay not pretty close to the center. Let's be aspirational. Anyway, he didn't say barbarous days. He used a much more conventional phrase of our darkest days.
Oh, darkest days. Sure.
But you know what that is? That's bad apple-ism.
Uh-huh.
It's a dark day. That's a bad apple. Our day, things are looking up. They're looking good. We have a few dark days.
No. That's sort of whitewashing it.
Yeah. We are in an age of dissolution. We are close to the brink. Let's name that. Let's name that and say, look, so we don't want to have a civil war, right? No. Let's talk honestly about the fight we don't want to have instead of puffing up our chests and bragging about the fight that's not even needed because the bad guy that we're getting ready for isn't there.
Right. No, I hear you. But the difficult thing about this is it's one thing to debate somebody with a different ideology than you. I can do that. If I could find a real Republican, a real conservative who, you know, is old school conservative, we could have an honest debate because they would be honest. But today's right, they're the gaslighters. When I hear them this morning, doesn't matter which right wing source you turn to, they're calling this an insurrection. There was nothing. This was a nothing day. It was another day in Washington, D.C. Yeah. The fact that they deny reality.
But why do you want to debate them? Well, I don't want to debate them.
No, but I wouldn't, because all they're doing is talking lies. There's nothing honest about what they're saying.
Why does not debate? That's the old norms. That's like, when was my friend across the aisle says?
Right. We're not your friend
anymore, right? I look at someone like, and look, I'm not being that radical. I look at someone like Stacey Abrams. Stacey Abrams is not interested in debating Brian Kemp. We know what Brian Kemp is. We're not going to say, aha, well, let the best idea win. We're going to beat Brian Kemp. In Georgia, the way Stacey Abrams has built up democratic culture by bringing out the ocean of democracy, right? That's what we're going to do. We're not going to convince Brian Kemp.
No. Or any of those followers.
Win by getting a few suburban voters. Look at what Trump is disputing. And again, this is not naming race in the speech. How did Biden supposedly steal the election? Philadelphia, Atlanta, Detroit. You're not talking about the vote being stolen here in Vermont, where I am, which is like 90-something percent white. He's saying black people voted. Black people voted to them. That's
the problem to them.
Right? So let's get the people voting, right? That's how we get in the fight. Forget the debate. The time for debating is past. I always think about something I think I may have mentioned to you before. There was Chuck Colson, who was Richard Nixon's hatchet man.
Right.
Real tough guy, right? Went to prison for Watergate and then became a kind of a modern warlord of the Christian right after he got out of prison. And I found a letter of his in his archive. And he says, I am always ready for dialogue with liberals. I'm always open to dialogue for liberals. It's so great. I stay right where I am and they always come to me.
Huh.
Let's stop going to them.
Stop going to them. You know, I come from such a different world when it comes to religion. I don't believe in organized religion. I don't have it. My family's Jewish, but it's tradition. It's not a dogma with me. So I don't understand the religious fervor out there. I read The Family and C Street, and I see how evangelicals are. But I always thought that they did have this belief in God and Jesus, who was supposed to be a good healing energy. And what I see now is this sort of evil force, and maybe I'm wrong, you're the religious scholar, I'm not, that now there's this connection between the religious right with the evangelicals and the fascists. Where's the connection there? Is it just the cult aspect of it? I don't get how...
I'll put this out there.
Okay.
Take the word cult, right? The word cult, throw it out.
Okay.
And the word, the reason, I mean, there's reasons in academic religious studies why we think cult doesn't really describe things, but also because it makes it things seem small. Like, they're the weirdos and we're... No. They're not the weirdos.
They're
right?
huge, right?
Nicole, you and me, we're the weirdos, unfortunately. We're the small minority. But there's a bigger majority we can join, right? So get cult out of there. But then another word that I want the left to just throw out, hypocrisy. The left spent so much time pointing to the hypocrisy of the right. And the right's like, okay, sure. Anyway, we're still gonna take power, right?
Right.
But we're hypocritical.
So?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, is there... look, and then we get into you do it too. There's plenty of hypocrisy on the left. There really is.
Oh, of course.
Hypocrisy is not what it's about. But then we get into the deeper level. Well, I thought Jesus was supposed to be nice and loving. Jesus is nice and loving. He loves you by erasing your queer identity. He loves you by erasing your very being. He loves you. This is what they mean by love. Well, we don't win by saying, well, that's not what love means. They're not going to say, oh, my God. I didn't look in the dictionary. That's like, no, that's what my idea of love means. Uh-huh. My Jesus is the one in scripture who says, I'm quoting here.
Yes, say, right?
I come to bring not peace, but the sword. Where do people get this idea that Jesus is you know, only this sweet, gentle guy? Jesus tells us in scripture. Now, that's one tradition. There's other Christian traditions which are peaceful and loving, and those are our allies and those who we work with and so on. But we just got to stop wasting all this energy and saying, I thought Christianity was supposed to be nice. Religion is as it does. Religion mm-hmm. is as it does. This is what it's doing. Okay, let's meet it. Let's meet it and defeat it.
How? I mean, I want them to pay taxes. I want them to be honest, but I don't see me making any progress there.
I mean, let's meet and defeat fascism. Let's meet and defeat fascism. And how do we do that? We do that by building a democratic culture. We do that by Joe Biden took some important steps. Dagger at the throat of democracy. That's naming the threat. He really did, right? Mm-hmm. The stuff that we like that needed to happen a year ago. It didn't
right.
happen. Right? We've got to stop saying, you know, I'm going to look for Republicans to work with.
Yeah, we no.
Yeah, we'll say, look, doors open, you know, and you know, astonishing, strange miracles happen. Like Liz Cheney actually walks through that door. Right?
Yes, right. And she doesn't make her right on anything else, but at least on this, she's against fascism.
Yeah. It's not actually a very high bar.
No.
Wow. Liz, what a moral character you are. You are against death camps. Amazing.
Yeah, right.
But we'll take it.
Right. Right. We're still so far away. That's why I try to remain positive, but it's difficult because I do see the reality of this is everywhere. You're right. They're not a small fringe element. This is everywhere. And again, you traveled the country and outside of the coastal areas, which is where I've always lived, you've been in it. You've met these people, you've talked to them, and this is a real
thing. Are you in the free state of Florida?
I'm in the free state of Florida.
And don't you have your own non-federally controlled state militia now? I mean,
that's what Governor Moron Death Sentence wants.
Yeah.
He's a scary man.
Yeah, the coasts are not safe. You know, as I think I just saw an amazing number, right? More people voted for Donald Trump in the greater New York City metropolitan area than are in North Dakota. Right?
Oh my God!
You know,
that's frightening. And again, North Dakota has the same amount of senatorial representation as the state of New York, which is another whole problem with our system.
That's the fight. That's where we concentrate in the fight. How do we do it? We do like Stacey Abrams, we mobilize, and then we start moving. It's all laid out for us. We don't need to invent anything new. We need statehood for Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico. We know what the steps are. it's gonna be hard to get there, but we just gotta can't keep on saying, well, maybe that doesn't work. Maybe strong words will work.
No, yeah. But we have barriers. I guess we need to overcome them, and we're not gonna do it in 30 minutes here. But Jeff Charlotte, I always appreciate your opening my mind to others. I mean, here I was thinking Joe Biden delivered the best speech of his presidency. And even with what you said, he still did.
Keep going, Joe. Good direction. Keep going.
Maybe he should hire you as a speechwriter.
My job is to throw stones.
And you do that well. Jeff Charlotte, thank you so much. I got to ask you one other question. A few months ago, I saw you tweeted something about why hasn't anyone done a great, like, in-depth interview with Amy Mann? Did you ever find it?
No, that's right. And
I sent you an interview that I come from the world of music radio. That's what I did before.
I remember that. And I shared that with my child who, you know, when I was young, I loved Amy Mann. I still love Amy Mann. Mm-hmm. Now my child is really an Amy Mann. So,
oh, nice.
It work. But yeah, no, she needs like the big New Yorker profile treatment.
I think so too. She has been flying just under the mainstream radar. Again, I was in LA for 15 years doing radio, so I had my fill of Amy Mann. But the world, I mean, she had a hit with Till Tuesday. She had a couple of but the world needs to know her because she is a brilliant songwriter and singer. And yeah, so it was nice to see. I've been working extra hard of late to not only focus on politics, because I think it's harmful to the mind and the psyche. So I love music. So I'm trying to branch out and bring more music into the show. And I was excited that you brought up an artist that I love. So I just thought I'd mention it.
Yeah. Well, maybe someone listening is like, I'm the person to do it. And we'll both enjoy reading it.
That'd be great. Jeff Charlotte, always a pleasure. People can find you, of course, on Twitter at Jeff Charlotte. In Vanity Fair, I'll link to the article we talked about today. Go read Jeff Charlotte and watch The Family on Netflix or read some of the other books. Jeff, you're great. How are things at Dartmouth these days?
Thank God I'm on sabbatical because our positivity rate is something through the roof. Not in that classroom. And to the teachers who are, you know, stay safe.
Yes. Stay safe. Jeff Charlotte, thank you so much. It's always great to talk to you. Happy New Year, and thank you.
Happy New Year.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Jeff Charlotte, he really is quite brilliant and always one of my favorite guests, too. He challenges me, and I really appreciate that. So with that, we're done. It's the weekend. Yes. All right. I'll leave you with the news. Next week, we've got a big week. I don't yet have anybody booked for Monday, but Laffy will be here Tuesday. On Wednesday, there's a new book that looks really interesting. A guy who runs the organization In the Public Interest is the author. He'll join us. Howie will be here Thursday. On Friday, I'm really excited about this. I don't know if you've ever watched the No Nukes movie. Do you remember that from the early 70s? Springsteen. In fact, Bruce Springsteen just released his entire set from the No Nukes concert, which we had only heard a few songs from before. It was brilliant. But it was also Jackson Browne and Bonnie Raitt and James Taylor and Carly Simon and the Doobie Brothers. And, oh, my God, it goes on. And Leon Russell, right? No, not Leon Russell. But it goes on and on and on like that. Well, John Hall had a song in the No Nukes album and movie called Power. John Hall used to front the band called Orleans. We're still the one. You know, it was kind of poppy, but he had a couple of hits with New Orleans, Still the One, and there was another one. Anyway, he wrote this song, Power. Just give me the warm power of the sun. Give me the steady flow of the waterfall. But please take your atomic poison power away. So that's the main lyrics of the song. I've always loved that song. And I especially like John Hall because he then went on to be a member of Congress representing New York State, part of upstate New York. And he's got a new song about the monarch butterfly. And he's going to join us on Friday. So we have that to look for. So we get to combine my love of music with concern about the planet and politics and everything on Friday with John Hall. We're still tying up the details, but it's going to happen. So we got that a week from today. In the meantime, have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. And I will see you Monday. And I'll leave you with the news. Thank you for listening, everybody. We can do this, right? Maybe I'll sign off with a line from the Mary Tyler Moore theme song. You're going to make it after all. I'm trying. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
So at this moment, we must decide, what kind of nation are we going to be? Are we going to be a nation that accepts political violence as a norm? Are we going to be a nation where we allow partisan election officials to overturn the legally expressed will of the people? Are we going to be a nation that lives not by the light of the truth, but in the shadow of lies? We cannot allow ourselves to be that kind of nation. The way forward is to recognize the truth and to live by it.
President Biden, marking the anniversary of the January 6th Capitol riot, calling the insurrection an attack on democracy as he addressed the nation from Statuary Hall. The general consensus from the people I respect is that this was Biden's best speech ever. And as he was speaking, I kept thinking, finally, he's saying the words we long to hear.
He's not just a former president. He's a defeated former president. Defeated by a margin of over 7 million of your votes in a full and free and fair election. There are simply zero proof the election results are inaccurate. In fact, in every venue where evidence had to be produced, an oath to tell the truth had to be taken, the former president failed to make his case.
Biden accused his predecessor of fueling the violence by spreading a web of lies in an attempt to overturn the 2020 election results.
For the first time in our history, a president had not just lost an election, he tried to prevent the peaceful transfer of power as a violent mob breached the Capitol. But they failed. They failed.
Thursday marked a year since a mob of Donald Trump supporters stormed the Capitol and tried to prevent lawmakers from certifying Joe Biden's victory. The former president, who canceled a planned January 6th press conference, said that Biden was using political theater to distract from his own policy failures. Right. Moving on to COVID. The Supreme Court today hearing two challenges to President Biden's vaccine mandates. The first, a vaccine or test mandate for businesses with more than 100 employees, and a vaccine requirement for healthcare workers at places that get federal funding. The justices will decide whether to put the requirements on hold while legal battles work their way through the courts, though it's not clear how soon the justices will rule. There's a lot of news in COVID world today. Most notably, six former health advisors to Biden's transition team released three articles published in the Journal of the American Medical Association saying that the U.S. should avoid getting caught in a, quote, perpetual state of emergency. Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel, who coordinated the effort, said that the experts were trying to outline a national strategy to find a, quote, new normal. It suggests that they believe that the SARS-CoV-2 virus, which causes COVID, will eventually be like the flu, which grew out of the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic. Much like the annual flu shot is a different formulation to fight off whatever that year's variance is, the same might be necessary with an annual COVID shot going forward. But for now, the CEO of Moderna said on Thursday that people might need to get a fourth shot of their vaccine in the fall to restore strong protection. Stefan Bancel said that people who got booster shots last fall would likely get through the winter with adequate resistance to infection and severe illness, but the vaccine's efficacy would wane in subsequent months. Data from the UK found that both Moderna and Pfizer's two-dose vaccines were just 10% effective at preventing symptomatic COVID-19 from the Omicron variant 20 weeks after the second dose. Protection was restored to 75% 2 weeks after a third booster shot, but efficacy declined to 40 to 50% 10 weeks later. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization on Thursday reported that a record 9.5 million COVID-19 cases were confirmed worldwide in the last week alone, marking a 71% jump compared to the previous week. They're calling this a tsunami fueled by the highly infectious Omicron variant. Hospitals across the nation are facing a staffing crisis. Nearly one in four medical centers reported critical shortages this week, the highest of the pandemic. Some are being forced to turn away ambulances, cancel procedures, and warn people to just stay away. And it's all happening because workers are calling in sick because of COVID, and burnout is also causing many healthcare professionals to just quit. In other news, the men who chased, then shot and killed Ahmaud Arbery, an unarmed black man in Georgia in 2020, are being sentenced on Friday. The three men face life in prison. The judge will also decide whether they should have the possibility of parole. And two of the men go on trial next month on federal hate crime charges. Turning to Kazakhstan, the situation there is tragic. President Tokayev said in a televised address on Friday that he had authorized police and soldiers to shoot and kill when confronting what he called terrorists participating in violent anti-government protests in the former Soviet nation. He said, quote, "Those who don't surrender will be eliminated." He dismissed calls for talks with protesters as, quote, "nonsense," saying it was impossible to negotiate with criminals and murderers. Kazakhstan's interior ministry said 26 protesters had been killed as of Friday. Another 18 have been wounded and more than 3,000 people detained. The protests began over spiking fuel prices, but now reflect broad dissatisfaction with the government. And finally, the Oregon Elections Division ruled on Thursday that Nicholas Kristof, the former New York Times columnist, is ineligible to run for governor because he failed to meet the state's residency requirement. According to Oregon's constitution, gubernatorial candidates must have resided in the state for at least 3 years prior to an election. Kristof, a homeowner in both Oregon and New York, voted in New York in the 2020 election, forcing him off the Oregon ballot for the 2022 midterms. Kristof, who left the New York Times to run for governor of Oregon, is expected to appeal the decision. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.